your bedtime sake poured for you by a pretty young girl. You call that serving your lord?" The captain was speechless. "Is it not the duty of a samurai to serve his lord faithfully and tirelessly? Isn't it your job to exercise benevolence toward the people who slave on the daimyo's behalf? Look at yourself. You just close your eyes to the fact that you're keeping the farmers from the work which gives them daily sustenance. You don't even have any consideration for your own men. You're supposed to be on an official mission, so what do? Every chance you get, you literally stuff yourself with other people's hard-earned food and drink and use your position to get the most comfortable quarters available. I should say you are a classic example of corruption, cloaking yourself with the authority of your superior to do nothing more than dissipate the energies of the common people for your own selfish ends." The captain was by now too stunned to close his gaping mouth. Takuan pressed on. "Now just try cutting off my head and sending it to Lord Ikeda Terumasa. That, I can tell you, would surprise him. He'd probably say, 'Why, Takuan? Has only your head come to visit me today? Where in the world is the rest of you?' No doubt you'd be interested to learn that Lord Terumasa and I used to partake of the tea ceremony together at the Myoshinji. We've also had several long and pleasant chats at the Daitokuji in Kyoto." Scraggly Beard's virulence drained from him in an instant. His drunkenness had worn off a bit, too, though he still appeared incapable of judging for himself whether Takuan was telling the truth or not. He seemed paralyzed, not knowing how to react.
"First, you'd better sit down," said the monk. "If you think I'm lying, I'll be happy to go with you to the castle and appear before the Lord himself. As a gift, I could take him some of the delicious buckwheat flour they make here. He's particularly fond of it. However, there's nothing more tedious, nothing I like less, than calling on a daimyo. Moreover, if the subject of your activities in Miyamoto should happen to come up while we were chatting over tea, I couldn't very well lie. It would probably end up with your having to commit suicide for your incompetence. I told you from the beginning to stop threatening me, but you warriors are all the same. You never think about consequences. And that's your greatest failing. Now put your sword down, and I'll tell you something else."
Deflated, the captain complied.
"Of course, you are familiar with General Sun Tzu's Art of War. You know, the classic Chinese work on military strategy. I assume any warrior in your position would be intimately acquainted with such an important book. Anyway, the reason I mention it is that I'd like to give you a lesson illustrating one of the book's main principles. I'd like to show you how to capture Takezo without losing any more of your own men or causing the villagers any more trouble than you have already. Now, this has to do with your official work, so you really should listen carefully."
He turned to the girl.
"Otsu, pour the captain another cup of sake, will you?"
The captain was a man in his 40s, 10 years or so older than Takuan, but it was clear from their faces at this moment that strength of character is not a matter of age. Takuan's tongue-lashing had humbled the older man and his bluster had evaporated. Meekly, he said,
"No, I don't want any more sake. I hope you'll forgive me. I had no idea you were a friend of Lord Terumasa. I'm afraid I've been very rude."
He was abject to the point of being comical, but Takuan refrained from rubbing it in.
"Let's just forget about that. What I want to discuss is how to capture Takezo. That is what you have to do to carry out your orders and maintain your honor as a samurai, isn't it?"
"Yes."
"Of course, I also know you don't care how long it takes to catch the man. After all, the longer it takes, the longer you can stay on at the temple, eating, drinking, and ogling Otsu."
"Please, don't bring that up anymore, particularly before his lordship."
The soldier looked like a child ready to burst into tears.
"I'm prepared to consider the whole incident a secret, but if this running around in the mountains all day long keeps up, the farmers will be in serious trouble. Not only the farmers, but all the rest of the people as well.
Everyone in this village is too upset and frightened to settle down and get on with their normal work. Now, as I see it, your trouble is that you have not employed the proper strategy. Actually, I don't think you've employed any strategy at all. I take it that you do not know the art of war?
I'm ashamed to admit it, but I don't.
Well, you should be ashamed. And you shouldn't be surprised when I call you a dolt. You may be an official, but you are sadly uneducated and totally ineffectual. There's no use in my beating you over the head with the obvious, however. I'll simply make you a proposition. I personally offer to capture Takezo for you in 3 days.
You? Capture him?
Do you think I'm joking?
No, but...
But what?
But counting the reinforcements from Himeji and all the farmers and foot soldiers, we've had more than 200 men combing the mountains for nearly 3 weeks.
I'm well aware of that fact.
And since it's spring, Takezo has the advantage. There's plenty to eat up there this time of year.
Are you planning on waiting till it snows, then?
Another 8 months or so?
No. I don't think we can afford to do that. You certainly can't. That's precisely why I'm offering to catch him for you. I don't need any help. I can do it alone. On second thoughts, though, maybe I should take Otsu along with me. Yes, the two of us would be enough.
You aren't serious, are you?
Would you please be quiet? Are you implying that Takuan Soho spends all his time making up jokes?
Sorry.
As I said, you don't know the art of war, and as I see it, that is the most important reason for your abominable failure. I, on the other hand, may be a simple priest, but I believe I understand Sun Tzu. There's only one stipulation, and if you won't agree to it, I'll just have to sit back and watch you bumble about until the snow falls, and maybe your head as well.
What's the condition? Said the captain warily.
If I bring back the fugitive, you let me decide his fate.
What do you mean by that?
The captain pulled at his mustache, a string of thoughts racing through his mind. How could he be sure that this strange monk wasn't deceiving him completely? Although he spoke eloquently, it could be that he was completely insane. Could he be a friend of Takezo's, an accomplice? Might he know where the man was hiding? Even if he didn't, which was likely at this stage, there was no harm in leading him on, just to see whether he'd go through with this crazy scheme. He'd probably worm out of it at the last minute anyway. With this in mind, the captain nodded his assent.
All right, then. If you catch him, you can decide what to do with him. Now, what happens if you don't find him in 3 days?
I'll hang myself from the big cryptomeria tree in the garden.
Early the next day, the temple's manservant, looking extremely worried, came rushing into the kitchen, out of breath and half shouting,
"Has Takuan lost his mind? I heard he promised to find Takezo himself."
Eyes rounded.
"No, not really.
Just how does he plan to do it?"
Wisecracks and mocking laughter followed, but there was also an undercurrent of worried whispering. When word reached the temple priest, he nodded sagely and remarked that the human mouth is the gateway to catastrophe. But the person most genuinely disturbed was Otsu. Only the day before, the farewell note from Matahachi had hurt her more than news of his death could ever have. She had trusted her fiancé and had even been willing to suffer the formidable Osugi as a slave-driving mother-in-law for his sake. Who was there to turn to now? For Otsu, plunged into darkness and despair, Takuan was life's one bright spot, her last ray of hope. The day before, weeping alone in the loom shed, she'd seized the sharp knife and cut to shreds the kimono cloth into which she'd literally woven her soul. She'd also considered plunging the fine blade into her own throat. Though she was sorely tempted to do so, Takuan's appearance had finally driven that thought from her mind. After soothing her and getting her to agree to pour the captain's sake, he'd patted her on the back. She could still feel the warmth of his strong hand as he led her out of the loom shed. And now, he'd made this insane agreement. Otsu wasn't nearly as concerned over her own safety as she was over the possibility that her only friend in the world might be lost to her because of his silly proposal. She felt lost and utterly depressed. Her common sense alone told her it was ridiculous to think that she and Takuan could locate Takezo in so short a time. Takuan even had the audacity to exchange vows with Scraggly Beard before the shrine of Hachimang, the god of war. After he returned, she took him severely to task for his rashness, but he insisted there was nothing to worry about. His intention, he said, was to relieve the village of its burden, to make travel on the highways safe once more, and to prevent any further waste of human life. In view of the number of lives that could be saved by quickly apprehending Takezo, his own seemed unimportant. She must see that. He also told her to get as much rest as she could before the evening of the following day when they would depart. She was to come along without complaint, trusting in his judgment completely. Otsu was too distraught to resist, and the alternative of staying behind and worrying was even worse than the thought of going. Late the following afternoon, Takuan was still napping with the cat in the corner of the main temple building. Otsu's face was hollow. The priest, the manservant, the acolyte, everybody had tried to persuade her not to go. "Go and hide," was their practical advice, but Otsu, for reasons she herself could hardly fathom, didn't feel the least inclined to do so. The sun was sinking fast, and the dense shadows of evening had begun to envelop the crevices in the mountain range that marked the course of the Aida River. The cat sprang down from the temple porch, and presently Takuan himself stepped onto the veranda. Like the cat before him, he stretched his limbs with a great yawn.
"Otsu," he called, "we'd better get going."
"I've already packed everything. Straw sandals, walking sticks, leggings, medicine, paulownia oil paper."
"You forgot something."
"What? A weapon? Should we take a sword or a lance or something?"
"Certainly not. I want to take along a supply of food."
"Oh, you mean some box lunches?"
"No, good food. I want some rice, some salty bean paste, and, oh, yes, a little sake. Anything tasty will do. I also need a pot. Go to the kitchen and make up a big bundle, and get a pole to carry it with."
The nearby mountains were now blacker than the best black lacquer, those in the distance paler than mica. It was late spring, and the breeze was perfumed and warm. Striped bamboo and wisteria vines entrapped the mist, and the farther Takuan and Otsu went from the village, the more the mountains, where every leaf shone faintly in the dim light, seemed to have been bathed by an evening shower. They walked through the darkness in single file, each shouldering an end of the bamboo pole from which swung their well-packed bundle.
"It's a nice evening for a walk, isn't it, Otsu?"
Takuan said, glancing over his shoulder.
"I don't think it's so wonderful," she muttered. "Where are we going, anyway?"
"I'm not quite sure yet," he replied with a slightly pensive air. "But let's go on a bit farther."
"Well, I don't mind walking."
"Aren't you tired?"
"No,"
replied the girl. But the pole obviously hurt her, for every once in a while she shifted it from one shoulder to the other.
"Where is everyone? We haven't seen a soul."
"The captain didn't show his face at the temple all day today. I bet he called the searchers back to the village so we can have 3 days all to ourselves. Takuan, just how do you propose to catch Takezo?"
"Oh, don't worry. He'll turn up sooner or later."
"Well, he hasn't turned up for anyone else. But even if he does, what are we going to do?
With all those men pursuing him for so long, he must be desperate by now. He'll be fighting for his life, and he's very strong to begin with.
My legs start shaking just thinking about it.
Careful! Watch your step!
Takuan shouted suddenly.
Oh!
Otsu cried in terror, stopping dead in her tracks.
What's the matter? Why did you scare me like that?
Don't worry. It's not Takezo. I just want you to watch where you walk. There are wisteria vine and bramble traps all along the side of the road here.
The searchers set them there to catch Takezo?
Uh-huh. But if we're not careful, we'll fall into one ourselves.
Takuan, if you keep saying things like that, I'll be so nervous I won't be able to put one foot in front of the other.
What are you worried about? If we do walk into one, I'll fall in first. No need for you to follow me.
He grinned back at her.
I must say, they went to an awful lot of trouble for nothing.
After a moment's silence, he added,
Otsu, doesn't the ravine seem to be getting narrower?
I don't know, but we passed the backside of Sanumo some time ago. This should be Tsujinohara.
If that's the case, we may have to walk all night.
Well, I don't even know where we're going. Why talk to me about it?
Let's put this down for a minute.
After they'd lowered the bundle to the ground, Takuan started toward a nearby cliff.
Where are you going?
To relieve myself.
100 feet below him, the waters that joined to form the Aida River were crashing thunderously from boulder to boulder. The sound roared up to him, filling his ears and penetrating his whole being. As he urinated, he gazed at the sky as if counting the stars.
Oh, this feels good, he exulted. Am I one with the universe, or is the universe one with me?
Takuan, called Otsu, aren't you finished yet? You certainly do take your time.
Finally, he reappeared and explained himself.
While I was about it, I consulted the Book of Changes, and now I know exactly what course of action we have to take. It's all clear to me now.
The Book of Changes? You aren't carrying a book.
Not the written one, silly. The one inside me. My very own original Book of Changes. It's in my heart, or belly, or somewhere. While I was standing there, I was considering the lay of the land, the look of the water, and the condition of the sky. Then I shut my eyes, and when I opened them, something said, "Go to that mountain over there."
He pointed to a nearby peak.
Are you talking about Takateru Mountain?
I have no idea what it's called. It's that one, with the level clearing about halfway up.
People call that Itadori Pasture.
Oh, it has a name, does it?
When they reached it, the pasture proved to be a small plain, sloping to the southeast and affording a splendid view of the surroundings. Farmers usually turned horses and cows loose here to graze, but that night not an animal could be seen or heard. The stillness was broken only by the warm spring breeze caressing the grass.
"We'll camp here," announced Takuan. "The enemy, Takezo, will fall into my hands just as General Cao Cao of Wei fell into the hands of Chu Ko Kongming."
As they laid down their load, Otsu inquired,
"What are we going to do here?"
"We are going to sit," replied Takuan firmly.
"How can we catch Takezo by just sitting here?"
"If you set up nets, you can catch birds on the wing without having to fly around yourself."
"We haven't set up any nets. Are you sure you haven't become possessed by a fox or something?"
"Let's build a fire, then. Foxes are afraid of fire, so if I am, I'll soon be exorcised."
They gathered some dry wood, and Takuan built a fire. It seemed to lift Otsu's spirits.
"A good fire cheers a person up, doesn't it?"
"It warms a person up, that's for sure. Anyway, were you unhappy?"
"Oh, Takuan, you can see the mood I've been in. And I don't think anyone really likes to spend the night in the mountains like this. What would we do if it rained right now?"
"On the way up, I saw a cave near the road. We could take shelter there till it stopped."
"That's what Takezo probably does at night and in bad weather, don't you think? There must be places like that all over the mountain. That's probably where he hides most of the time, too."
"Probably.
He doesn't really have much sense, but he must have enough to get in out of the rain.
She grew pensive.
Takuan, why do the people in the village hate him so much?
The authorities make them hate him.
Otsu,
these people are simple. They're afraid of the government. So afraid that if it so decrees, they'll drive away their fellow villagers, even their own kin.
You mean they only worry about protecting their own skins?
Well, it's not really their fault. They're completely powerless. You have to forgive them for putting their own interests first, since it's a case of self-defense. What they really want is just to be left alone.
But what about the samurai? Why are they making such a fuss about an insignificant person like Takezo?
Because he's a symbol of chaos, an outlaw. They have to preserve the peace. After Sekigahara, Takezo was obsessed with the idea that the enemy was chasing him. He made his first big mistake by breaking through the barrier at the border. He should have used his wits somehow, snuck through at night or gone through in disguise, anything. But not Takezo. He had to go and kill a guard and then kill other people later on. After that, it just snowballed. He thinks he has to keep on killing to protect his own life. But he's the one who started it. The whole unfortunate situation was brought about by one thing. Takezo's complete lack of common sense.
Do you hate him too?
I loathe him. I abhor his stupidity. If I were lord of the province, I'd have him suffer the worst punishment I could devise. In fact, as an object lesson to the people, I'd have him torn limb from limb. After all, he's no better than a wild beast, is he? A provincial lord cannot afford to be generous with the likes of Takezo, even if he does seem to some to be no more than a young ruffian. It would be detrimental to law and order, and that's not good, particularly in these unsettled times.
I always thought you were kind, Takuan, but deep down, you're quite hard, aren't you?
I didn't think you cared about the daimyo's laws. Well, I do. I think that good should be rewarded and evil punished, and I came here with the authority to do just that.
Oh, what was that?
Cried Otsu, jumping up from her place by the fire.
Didn't you hear it? It was a rustling sound, like footsteps in those trees over there.
Footsteps?
Takuan, too, became alert, but after listening closely for a few moments, he burst into laughter.
Ha ha! It's only some monkeys! Look!
They could see the silhouettes of a big monkey and a little one swinging through the trees. Otsu, visibly relieved, sat down again.
Phew! That scared me half to death.
For the next couple of hours, the two sat silently, staring at the fire. Whenever it would dwindle, Takuan would break some dry branches and throw them on.
Otsu, what are you thinking about?
Me?
Yes, you. Although I do it all the time, I really hate holding conversations with myself.
Otsu's eyes were puffy from the smoke. Looking up at the starry sky, she spoke softly.
I was thinking of how strange the world is. All those stars way up there in the empty blackness. No, I don't mean that. The night is full. It seems to embrace everything. If you stare at the stars a long time, you can see them moving. Slowly, slowly moving. I can't help thinking the whole world is moving. I feel it. And I'm just a little speck in it all. A speck controlled by some awesome power I can't even see. Even while I sit here thinking, my fate is changing bit by bit. My thoughts seem to go round and round in circles.
You're not telling the truth, said Takuan sternly. Of course those ideas entered your head, but you really had something much more specific on your mind.
Otsu was silent.
I apologize if I violated your privacy, Otsu, but I read those letters you received.
You did? But the seal wasn't broken.
I read them after finding you in the loom shed.
When you said you didn't want them, I stuck them in my sleeve. I guess it was wrong of me, but later, when I was in the privy, I took them out and read them just to pass the time.
You're awful! How could you do such a thing? And just to pass the time?
Well, for whatever reason. Anyway, now I understand what started that flood of tears. Why you looked half dead when I found you. But listen, Otsu, I think you were lucky. In the long run, I think it's better that things turned out the way they did. You think I'm awful? Look at him.
What do you mean?
Matahachi was and still is irresponsible. If you married him, and then one day he surprised you with a letter like that, what would you do then? Don't tell me. I know you. You'd dive into the sea from a rocky cliff. I'm glad it's all over before it could come to that.
Women don't think that way.
Oh, really? How do they think?
I'm so angry I could scream.
She tugged angrily at the sleeve of her kimono with her teeth.
Someday I'll find him. I swear I will. I won't rest until I've told him, to his face, exactly what I think of him. And the same goes for that Oko woman.
She broke into tears of rage. As Takuan stared at her, he mumbled cryptically,
"It started, hasn't it?"
She looked at him dumbfounded.
"What?"
He stared at the ground, seemingly composing his thoughts. Then he began,
"Otsu, I'd really hoped that you, of all people, would be spared the evils and duplicities of this world, that your sweet, innocent self would go through all the stages of life unsullied and unharmed. But it looks like the rough winds of fate have begun to buffet you, as they buffet everyone else."
"Oh, Takuan, what should I do? I'm so, so angry."
Her shoulders shook with her sobbing as she buried her face in her lap. By dawn, she'd cried herself out, and the two of them hid in the cave to sleep. That night, they kept watch by the fire and slept through the next day in the cave again. They had plenty of food, but Otsu was baffled. She kept saying she couldn't see how they'd ever capture Takezo at this rate. Takuan, on the other hand, remained sublimely unperturbed. Otsu hadn't a clue to what he was thinking. He made no move to search anywhere, nor was he the slightest bit disconcerted by Takezo's failure to appear. On the evening of the third day, as on the previous nights, they kept vigil by the fireside.
"Takuan," Otsu finally blurted, "this is our last night, you know. Our time is up tomorrow."
That's true, isn't it?"
"Well, what do you plan to do?"
"Do about what?"
"Oh, don't be so difficult. You do remember, don't you, the promise you made to the captain?"
"Why, yes, of course."
"Well, if we don't bring Takezo back..."
He interrupted her.
"I know, I know. I'll have to hang myself from the old cryptomeria tree. But don't worry. I'm not ready to die just yet."
"Then why don't you go and look for him?"
"If I did, do you really think I'd find him? In these mountains?"
"Oh, I don't understand you at all. And yet, somehow, just sitting here, I feel like I'm getting braver, mustering up the nerve to let things turn out whatever way they will."
She laughed.
"Or maybe I'm just going crazy, like you."
"I'm not crazy. I just have nerve. That's what it takes."
"Tell me, Takuan, was it nerve and nothing else that made you take this on?"
"Yes."
"Nothing but nerve? That's not very encouraging. I thought you must have some foolproof scheme up your sleeve."
Otsu had been on her way toward sharing her companion's confidence, but his disclosure that he was operating on sheer audacity sent her into a fit of despondency.
Was he totally insane?
Sometimes, people who are not quite right in the mind are taken by others to be geniuses. Takuan might be one of those. Otsu was beginning to think this was a distinct possibility. The monk, serene as ever, continued to gaze absently into the fire. Presently he mumbled, as though he'd just noticed,
"It's very late, isn't it?"
"It certainly is. It'll be dawn soon," snapped Otsu with deliberate tartness. Why had she trusted this suicidal lunatic? Paying no attention to the sharpness of her response, he muttered,
"Funny, isn't it?"
"What are you muttering about, Takuan?"
"It just occurred to me that Takezo has to show up pretty soon."
"Yes, but maybe he doesn't realize you two have an appointment." Looking at the monk's unsmiling face, she softened. "Do you really think he will?"
"Of course I do."
"But why would he just walk right into a trap?"
"It's not exactly that. It has to do with human nature, that's all. People aren't strong at heart. They're weak. And solitude is not their natural state, particularly when it involves being surrounded by enemies and chased with swords. You may think it's natural, but I'd be very much surprised if Takezo manages to resist the temptation to pay us a call and warm himself by the fire."
"Isn't that just wishful thinking? He may be nowhere near here."
Takuan shook his head and said,
"No, it is not just wishful thinking. It isn't even my own theory. It's that of a master of strategy."
He spoke so confidently that Otsu found herself relieved that his disagreement was so definite.
"I suspect that Shinmen Takezo is somewhere very close by, but hasn't yet decided whether we're friends or enemies. He's probably plagued, poor boy, by a multitude of doubts, struggling with them, unable to advance or retreat. It'll be my guess he's hiding in the shadows right now, looking out at us furtively, wondering desperately what to do. Ah, I know. Let me have the flute you carry in your obi."
"My bamboo flute?"
"Yes, let me play it for a while."
"No, impossible. I never let anyone touch it."
"Why?"
Takuan insisted.
"Never mind why,"
she cried with a shake of her head.
"What harm would it do to let me use it? Flutes improve the more they're played. I won't hurt it."
"But..." Otsu clasped her right hand firmly on the flute in her obi. She always carried it next to her body, and Takuan knew how much she treasured the instrument. He had never imagined, however, she would refuse to let him play it.
"I really won't break it, Otsu. I've handled dozens of flutes. Oh, come now, at least let me hold it."
"No."
"Whatever happens?"
"Whatever happens."
"You're stubborn."
"Okay, I'm stubborn."
Takuan gave up.
"Well, I'd just as soon listen to you play it. Will you play me just one little piece?"
"I don't want to do that either."
"Why not?"
"Because I'd start to cry, and I can't play the flute when I'm crying."
Mused Takuan. While he felt pity for this obstinate tenacity, so characteristic of orphans, he was aware of a void deep within their stubborn hearts. They seemed to him doomed to yearn desperately for that which they could not have, for the parental love with which they were never blessed. Otsu was constantly calling out to the parents she'd never known, and they to her, but she had no first-hand knowledge of parental love. The flute was the only thing her parents had left her, the only image of them she'd ever had. When barely old enough to see the light of day, she'd been left like an abandoned kitten on the porch of the Shippoji. The flute had been tucked in her tiny obi. It was the one and only link that might in the future enable her to seek out people of her own blood. Not only was it the image, it was the voice of the mother and father she'd never seen.
"So she cries when she plays it," thought Takuan. "No wonder she's so reluctant to let anyone handle it, or even to play it herself."
He felt sorry for her. On this third night, for the first time, a pearly moon shimmered in the sky, now and then dissolving behind misty clouds. The wild geese that always migrate to Japan in fall and go home in spring were apparently on their way back north,
Occasionally their quacking reached them from among the clouds. Rousing himself from his reverie, Takuan said,
"The fire's gone down, Otsu. Would you put some more wood on it?"
"Why? What's the matter? Is something wrong?"
Otsu didn't answer.
"Are you crying?"
Still, she said nothing.
"I'm sorry I reminded you of the past. I didn't mean to upset you."
"It's nothing," she whispered. "I shouldn't have been so stubborn. Please, take the flute and play it."
She brought the instrument out from her obi and offered it to him across the fire. It was in a wrapper of old, faded brocade. The cloth was worn, the cords tattered, but there still remained a certain antique elegance.
"May I look at it?" asked Takuan.
"Yes, please do. It doesn't matter anymore."
"But why don't you play it instead of me? I think I really would rather listen. I'll just sit here like this."
He turned sideways and clasped his arms around his knees.
"All right. I'm not very good," she said modestly. "But I'll try."
She knelt in formal fashion on the grass, straightened her kimono collar, and bowed to the flute laying before her. Takuan said no more. He seemed no longer to even be there. There was only the great, lonely universe enveloped in night. The monk's shadowy form might well have been a rock that had rolled down from the hillside and settled on the plain. Otsu, her white face turned slightly to one side, put the cherished heirloom to her lips. As she wetted the mouthpiece and prepared herself inwardly to play, she seemed a different Otsu altogether, an Otsu embodying the strength and dignity of art. Turning to Takuan, she once again, in proper fashion, disavowed any claim to skill.
He nodded perfunctorily.
The liquid sound of the flute began. As the girl's thin fingers moved over the seven holes of the instrument, her knuckles looked like tiny gnomes absorbed in a slow dance. It was a low sound, like the gurgling of a brook. Takuan felt that he himself had turned into flowing water, splashing through a ravine, playing in the shallows. When the high notes sounded, he felt his spirit wafted into the sky to gamble with the clouds. The sound of earth and the reverberations of heaven mingled and were transformed into the wistful sighs of the breeze blowing through the pines, lamenting the impermanence of this world. As he listened raptly, his eyes closed, Takuan could not help but recall the legend of Prince Hiromasa, who, while strolling on a moonlit night at Suzaku Gate in Kyoto and playing his flute as he walked, heard another flute harmonizing with his. The prince searched out the player and found him in the upper story of the gate. Having exchanged flutes, the two played music together throughout the night. Only later did the prince discover that his companion had been a devil in human form.
"Even a devil," thought Takuan, "is moved by music. How much more deeply must a human being, subject to the five passions, be affected by the sound of the flute in the hands of this beautiful girl?"
He wanted to weep, but shed no tears. His face sank deeper between his knees, which he unconsciously hugged more tightly. As the light from the fire gradually faded, Otsu's cheeks turned a deeper red. She was so absorbed in her music that it was difficult to distinguish her from the instrument she was playing. Was she calling to her mother and father? Were these sounds ascending into the sky really asking, "Where are you?" And was there not mingled with this plea the bitter resentment of a maiden who had been deserted and betrayed by a faithless man? She seemed intoxicated by the music, overwhelmed by her own emotions. Her breathing began to show signs of fatigue. Tiny beads of sweat appeared around the edges of her hair. Tears flowed down her face.
Though the melody was broken by stifled sobs, it seemed to go on and on forever. And then suddenly, there was a movement in the grass. It was no more than 15 or 20 feet from the fire and sounded like a creeping animal. Takuan's head shot up, looking straight at the black object. He quietly raised his hand and waved a greeting.
"You over there! It must be chilly in the dew. Come over here by the fire and warm yourself. Come and talk with us, please."
Startled, Otsu stopped playing and said, "Takuan, are you talking to yourself again?"
"Didn't you notice?" he asked, pointing. "Takezo has been over there for some time, listening to you play the flute."
She turned to look, and then, with a shriek, threw her flute at the black form. It was indeed Takezo. He jumped like a startled deer and started to flee. Takuan, as astonished as Takezo by Otsu's scream, felt as though the net he was so carefully hauling in had broken and the fish escaped. Jumping to his feet, he called out at the top of his lungs,
"Takezo! Stop!"
There was overpowering strength in his voice, a commanding force that could not easily be ignored. The fugitive stopped as though nailed to the ground and looked back, a little stupefied. He stared at Takuan with suspicious eyes. The monk said no more. Slowly crossing his arms on his chest, he stared back at Takezo as steadily as Takezo was staring at him. The two seemed even to be breathing in unison. Gradually there appeared at the corner of Takuan's eyes the wrinkles that marked the beginning of a friendly smile. Unfolding his arms, he beckoned to Takezo and said,
"Now, come here."
At the sound of the words, Takezo blinked. A strange expression came over his dark face.
"Come on over here," Takuan urged, "and we can talk to each other."
There followed a puzzled silence.
"There's lots to eat, and we even have some sake. We're not your enemies, you know. Come over by the fire. Let's talk."
More silence.
"Takezo, aren't you making a big mistake? There's a world outside where there are fires and food and drink and even human sympathy. You persist in driving yourself about in your own private hell. You're taking a pretty warped view of the world, you know. But I'll stop trying to argue with you. In your condition, you could hardly have much of an ear for reason. Just come over here by the fire. Otsu, warm up the potato stew you made a while ago. I'm hungry, too."
Otsu put the pot on the fire, and Takuan placed a jar of sake near the flames to heat it. This peaceful scene allayed Takezo's fears, and he inched nearer. When he was almost on top of them, he stopped and stood still, apparently held back by some inner embarrassment. Takuan rolled a rock up near the fire and patted Takezo on the back.
"You sit here," he said.
Abruptly, Takezo sat down. Otsu, for her part, couldn't even look her ex-fiancé's friend in the face. She felt as though she were in the presence of an unchained beast. Takuan, lifting the lid of the pot, said,
"It seems to be ready."
He stuck the tips of his chopsticks into a potato, drew it out, and popped it into his mouth. Chewing heartily, he proclaimed,
"Very nice and tender. Won't you have some, Takezo?"
Takezo nodded, and for the first time, grinned, showing a set of perfect white teeth. Otsu filled a bowl and gave it to him, whereupon he began alternatively to blow on the hot stew and slurp it up in big mouthfuls. His hands trembled, and his teeth clattered against the edge of the bowl. Pitifully hungry as he was, the trembling was uncontrollable, frighteningly so.
"Good, isn't it?" asked the monk, putting down his chopsticks. "How about some sake?"
"I don't want any sake."
"Don't you like it?"
"I don't want any now."
After all that time in the mountains, he was afraid it might make him sick. Presently, he said, politely enough,
"Thank you for the food. I'm warmed up now."
Have you had enough?
Plenty, thank you.
As he handed his bowl back to Otsu, he asked,
Why did you come up here? I saw your fire last night, too.
The question startled Otsu, and she had no answer ready. But Takuan came to the rescue by saying forthrightly,
To tell the truth, we came here to capture you.
Takezo showed no particular surprise, though he seemed hesitant to take what Takuan had said at face value. He hung his head in silence, then looked from one to the other of them. Takuan saw that the time had come to act. Turning to face Takezo directly, he said,
How about it? If you're going to be captured anyway, wouldn't it be better to be tied up with the bonds of the Buddha's law? The daimyo's regulations are law, and the Buddha's law is law, but of the two, the bonds of the Buddha are the more gentle and humane.
No, no, said Takezo, shaking his head angrily.
Takuan continued mildly.
Just listen for a minute. I understand that you are determined to hold out to the death, but in the long run, can you really win?
What do you mean, can I win?
I mean, can you successfully hold out against the people who hate you, against the laws of the province, and against your own worst enemy, yourself?
Oh, I know I've already lost, groaned Takezo.
His face was sadly contorted, and his eyes brimmed with tears.
I'll be cut down in the end, but before I am, I'll kill the old Hongiden woman and the soldiers from Himeji and all the other people I hate. I'll kill as many as I can.
What will you do about your sister?
Huh?
Ogin, what are you going to do about her? She's locked up in the stockade at Hinagura, you know?
Despite his earlier resolve to rescue her, Takezo could not answer.
Don't you think you should start considering the well-being of that good woman? She's done so much for you. And what about your duty to carry on the name of your father, Shinmen Munisai? Have you forgotten that it goes back through the Hirata family to the famous Akamatsu clan of Harima?
Takezo covered his face with his blackened, now nearly clawed hands, his sharp shoulders piercing upward as they shook in his haggard, trembling body. He broke into bitter sobs.
I don't know. What difference does it make now?
At that, Takuan suddenly clenched his fist and let go with a solid punch to Takezo's jaw.
Fool!
The monk's voice thundered. Taken by surprise, Takezo reeled from the blow, and before he could recover, took another punch on the other side.
You irresponsible oaf! You stupid ingrate! Since your father and mother and ancestors are not here to punish you, I'll do it for them. Take that!
The monk struck him again, this time knocking him all the way to the ground.
Does it hurt yet?
He asked belligerently.
Yes, it hurts,
the fugitive whined.
Good. If it hurts, you may still have a little human blood coursing through your veins. Otsu, hand me that rope, please. Well, what are you waiting for? Bring me the rope. Takezo already knows I'm going to tie him up. He's prepared for it. It's not the rope of authority, it's the rope of compassion. There's no reason for you to either fear or pity him. Quick, girl, the rope!
Takezo lay still on his stomach, making no effort to move. Takuan easily straddled his back. If Takezo had wanted to resist, he could have kicked Takuan in the air like a little paper ball. They both knew that. Yet, he lay passively, arms and legs outstretched, as though he'd finally surrendered to some invisible law of nature. The Old Cryptomeria Tree. Although it was not the time of the morning when the temple bell was usually rung, its heavy, regular gonging resounded through the village and echoed far into the mountains. This was the day of reckoning, when Takuan's time limit was up and the villagers raced up the hill to find out whether he'd done the impossible. The news that he had spread like wildfire.
Takezo's been captured!
Really? Who got him? Takura!
I can't believe it. Without a weapon?
It can't be true.
The crowd surged up to the Shippoji to gawk at the collared outlaw, who was tied like an animal to the stair railing in front of the main sanctuary. Some gulped and gasped at the sight, as though they were beholding the countenance of the dreaded demon of Mount Oe. As if to deflate their exaggerated reaction, Takuan sat a bit farther up the stairs, leaning back on his elbows and grinning amiably.
"People of Miyamoto," he shouted, "now you can go back to your fields in peace. The soldiers will be gone soon."
To the intimidated villagers, Takuan had become a hero overnight, their savior and protector from evil. Some bowed deeply to him, their heads nearly touching the ground of the temple courtyard. Others pushed their way forward to touch his hand or robe. Others knelt at his feet. Takuan, appalled at this display of idolatry, pulled away from the mob and held up his hand for silence.
"Listen, men and women of Miyamoto. I have something to say, something important."
The hue and cry died down.
"It is not I who deserve the credit for capturing Takezo. It was not I who accomplished it, but the law of nature. Those who break it always lose in the end. It is the law that you should respect."
"Don't be ridiculous. You caught him, not nature."
"Don't be so modest, monk. We give credit where it's due."
"Forget the law. We have you to thank."
"Well, then, thank me," continued Takuan. "I don't mind that. But you should pay homage to the law. Anyway, what's done is done, and right now there's something very important I'd like to ask you about. I need your help."
"What is it?"
came the question from the curious crowd.
"Just this. What shall we do with Takezo now that we've got him? My agreement with the House of Ikeda's representative, who I'm sure you all know by sight, was that if I didn't bring the fugitive back in 3 days' time, I'd hang myself from that big cryptomeria. If I did succeed, I was promised, I could decide his fate."
People started to murmur.
"We heard about that."
He assumed a judicial pose.
"Well, then, what shall we do with him? As you see, the dreaded monster is here in the flesh. Not very fearsome, really, is he? In fact, he came along without a fight, the weakling. Shall we kill him or let him go?"
There was a rumble of objections at the idea of setting Takezo free. One man shouted,
"We've got to kill him. He's no good. He's a criminal. If we let him live, he'll be the curse of the village."
While Takuan paused, seeming to consider the possibilities, angry, impatient voices from the rear shouted,
"Kill him! Kill him!"
At that point, an old woman pushed her way to the front, shoving aside men twice her size with sharp jabs of her elbows. It was, of course, the irate Osugi. When she reached the steps, she glared at Takezo for a moment, then turned and faced the villagers. Waving a mulberry branch in the air, she cried,
"I won't be satisfied with just killing him. Make him suffer first. Just look at that hideous face."
Turning back to the prisoner, she raised her switch, screaming,
"You degenerate, loathsome creature!"
and brought it down on him several times until she ran out of breath and her arm dropped to her side. Takezo cringed in pain as Osugi turned to Takuan with a menacing look.
"What do you want from me?" the monk asked. "It was because of this murderer that my son's life has been ruined."
Shaking violently, she screeched,
"And without Matahachi, there is no one to carry on our family name." "Well," countered Takuan, "Matahachi, if you don't mind my saying so, never amounted to much anyway. Won't you be better off in the long run taking your son-in-law as heir, giving him the honored Hongiden name?"
"How dare you say such a thing?"
Suddenly, the proud dowager burst into sobs.
"I don't care about what you think. Nobody understood him. He wasn't really bad. He was my baby."
Her fury rose again, and she pointed at Takezo.
He led him astray. He made him a good-for-nothing like himself. I have the right to take my revenge.
Addressing the crowd, she beseeched them.
Let me decide. Leave it to me. I know what to do with him.
Just then, a loud and angry shout from the back cut the old woman off. The crowd parted like rent cloth, and the latecomer marched quickly to the front. It was Scraggly Beard himself, in a towering rage.
What's going on here? This isn't a sideshow. All of you, get out of here. Go back to work. Go home. Immediately.
There was shuffling, but no one turned to go.
You heard what I said. Get a move on. What are you waiting for?
He stepped threateningly toward them, his hand poised above his sword. Those in the front shrank back, wide-eyed.
No! Interrupted Takuang. There's no reason for these good people to go. I called them here for the express purpose of discussing what's to be done with Takezo.
You be quiet, commanded the captain. You have nothing to say in this matter.
Drawing himself up and glaring first at Takuang, then at Osugi, and finally at the crowd, he boomed,
This Shinmen Takezo has not only committed grave and serious crimes against the laws of this province, he is also a fugitive from Sekigahara. His punishment cannot be decided by the people. He must be turned over to the government.
Takuan shook his head.
Nonsense!
Seeing that Scraggly Beard was ready to respond, he raised a silencing finger.
That's not what you agreed to!
The captain, his dignity seriously threatened, started to argue.
Takuan, you will no doubt receive the money the government has offered as a reward, but as an official representative of Lord Terumasa, it is my duty to take charge of the prisoner at this point. His fate need no longer be of any concern to you. Don't trouble yourself even thinking about it.
Takuan, making no effort to answer, broke into peals of laughter. Every time it seemed to subside, it would come rolling up again.
Watch your manners, monk, warned the captain.
He started to spit and sputter.
What's so funny, huh? You think this is all a joke?
My manners?
Repeated Takuan, cracking up in a laughter again.
My manners? Look, Scraggly Beard, are you thinking of breaking our agreement? Going back on your sacred word? If you are, I warn you, I'll turn Takezo loose here and now.
With a unanimous gasp, the villagers began edging away.
Ready?
Asked Takuan, reaching toward the rope that bound Takezo. The captain was speechless.
And when I unleash him, I'm going to sick him on you first. You can fight it out between yourselves, then arrest him if you can.
Now hold on, just a minute.
I kept my part of the bargain,
Takuan continued to make as if he were about to remove the prisoner's fetters.
Stop, I say!
The samurai's forehead beaded with sweat.
Why?
Well, because...
He was almost stuttering.
Now that he's tied up, there's no point in letting him go just to cause more trouble, now is there? I'll tell you what. You can kill Takezo yourself. Here's my sword. Just let me have his head to take back with me. That's fair, isn't it?
Give you his head? Not on your life! It's the business of the clergy to conduct funerals, but giving away the corpses or parts of them? Well, that'd give us priests a bad name, wouldn't it? No one would trust us with their dead, and anyway, if we started to just give them away, the temples would go broke in no time.
Even with the samurai's hand resting on his sword handle, Takuan couldn't resist baiting him. Turning to the mob, the monk became serious again.
I ask you to talk it over among yourselves and give me an answer. What shall we do? The old woman says it's not enough to kill him outright. We should torture him first. What do you think of lashing him to a branch of the cryptomeria tree for a few days? We could bind him hand and foot, and he would be exposed to the elements day and night. The crows will probably gouge out his eyeballs. How does that sound?
His proposal struck his listeners as so inhumanely cruel that at first no one could answer. Except Osugi, who said,
Takuan,
This idea of yours shows what a wise man you really are, but I think we should string him up for a week, no more. Let him hang there 10 or 20 days. Then I myself will come and strike the fatal blow.